This is Once for All, where Jude 3 says, I found it necessary to write appealing to you to contend for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. Listen in as the faith held by believers of all times is now delivered to you.
Wasn't even so much the State of the Union address that made the headlines as much as it was the Democrats' reaction to the State of the Union address that made the headlines. Thank you for tuning in to this edition of Once for All. It's great to have you with us today. As we always do on Fridays here on Once for All, we take a look at what's going on in the news and get our arms around it, both from a political perspective and also from a Christian worldview perspective. Helping us with the political perspective is our regular guest, Jeff Smith. Jeff, welcome back.
Yeah, it's great to be here, Evan.
A lot going on this week in the news. We've centered around a few things. We want to look at the State of the Union address, particularly the response that we had to that. Also, the announcement of Cecile Richards resigning as president of Planned Parenthood, the national organization, and we're going to have a local response to that as well. So looking forward to today's show. If our listeners want to chime in during the course of today's broadcast, they can call toll-free 1-844-51-FAITH, 1-844-51-FAITH. You can also send me an email, deliveredonceforall@gmail.com. I get the email live in the studio. You can read it live on the air, deliveredonceforall@gmail.com. Maybe before we play audio, Jeff, I want to get your reaction to the State of the Union address. Anything that stood out to you, and then we'll listen to Joe Kennedy give his response from the Democratic perspective.
Well, from the State of the Union, I guess the first takeaway was it was a little bit long. clearly, it was a teleprompter speech, which is fine.
The speech was only like 10 minutes long, but there was just a lot of applause.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think what the biggest takeaway for me from it was, and maybe that's part of the reason that we're taking the angle this morning that we're taking talking about the Democratic response, was the Democratic response at the speech. Yeah. The president laid out many things that would be considered friendly proposals to the Democrats and to the liberal, you know, politicians. And they sat on their hands. They basically didn't participate. They sat for the national anthem, talk of the national anthem, talk of the flag.
Talk that America is the greatest country and we're gonna bring forth hard work and effort to be anything that we want to be. I mean, those are our American ideals. And I don't know how you, as an American, don't stand up and applaud for those things.
Yeah, and I would even take it to things. I mean, of course, you should applaud for those things. It should be a given. I don't understand why it's not. But then even things that they're in favor of, you know, he's offering to legalize more than three times as many illegal aliens, whether you call them dreamers or the families of dreamers or whoever it involves, than the DACA program that President Obama put in place was even protecting. So he's offering to legalize three times as many people as President Obama was protecting. And they sat on their hands. Mm-hmm. They had no interest in that. So it shows you that it's become all about politics. The views apparently really don't matter. It matters who holds those views, and they hate President Trump so much that they're willing to sell their constituent short because they hate President Trump. And I think it's a sad place that we're at. And you know, we've seen division for years, and we even had someone during one of President Obama's speeches, State of the Union addresses, basically yell out and call him a liar. And I don't applaud that. I don't think that that's a good thing. Even if it was a truthful statement, mm-hmm. I don't applaud that kind of division. But this idea that we just sit like angry children that didn't get their way, for mom wouldn't let you have dessert, and you're going to sit there and you're going to pout. And I mean, at one point there, I saw a screenshot of Nancy Pelosi looking back toward the rest of the Democrats, and Cory Booker looked like, somebody just stole his lunch money or something. And it's like she's looking to see that, you better all stay in line. I better not see any of you standing or clapping or, I don't know. And again, I'm not going to blame this all on the Democrats. This division has been building for years, and it's a kind of a sad state of affairs, if you ask me.
No, I agree. Well, let's listen to some audio. This is the speech that Joe Kennedy gave as the Democratic response to the State of the Union address. Excerpts of this audio provided courtesy of Guardian News.
Bombarded with one false choice after another. Coal miners or single moms? Rural communities or inner cities? The coast or the heartland? As if the mechanic in Pittsburgh, a teacher in Tulsa, and a daycare worker in Birmingham are bitter rivals, rather than mutual casualties of a system forcefully rigged towards those at the top. As if the parent who lies awake, terrified that their transgender son or daughter will be beaten and bullied at school, is any more or less legitimate than a parent whose heart is shattered by a daughter in the grips of an opioid addiction. So here is the answer that Democrats offer tonight. We choose both.
All right, so that's a bit from Joe Kennedy. Jeff, I have to say, I really don't know what he's talking about. I mean, the setup that we were forced to choose between, coast or heartland, blue collar worker, white collar. I don't even know what that's in reference to. I mean, in the rules of logic, we call that a false dichotomy. I mean, I really don't know what he's making reference to, but it really is emotive. It really pulls the heartstrings. It really maybe gets an applause from the 50 people who are there or so, but I'm not really sure that that's actually, it's supposed to be a response to the State of the Union address, but I don't really know what he's talking about.
Well, it's clear that this speech was written before the State of the Union address was given. Now, they do get advance notes of what's going to be in the address, but this entire speech completely ignored all of the things that were said in the State of the Union. But this particular one, we kind of went, I didn't know which sound bites we were going to be using, but we went right to the heart of what was the worst about this speech is, what kind of a straw man argument is it that we're choosing between a transgender child or an opioid addicted child? What world are these people living in? Mm-hmm. I mean, and not only is it a straw man argument, but who's choosing between those two people? No, mm-hmm. Nobody's choosing. I don't even choosing for what? Choosing at who we should help? Probably millions of kids are bullied every day. It doesn't matter to me whether they're right. Transgender or anything else. We should try and teach our kids not to bully. We should also teach our kids how to handle being bullied. This argument drives me nuts when it comes up, because we always talk about the bullies, and we're never going to stop bullies completely. There's always going to be bullies. There's always going to be people that treat other people different because of the way they look. Unfortunately, it's human nature. Mm-hmm. But we've got to talk about how we deal with the victim, and we can't treat them like victims. That's become a real problem.
Notice that false association that happens a lot. And the false association is if you are, if you have a voice against, on a moral ground, you know, homosexuality, or a voice against on a moral ground, you know, transgender, you know, whatever, transition, you know, then you must be endorsing or condoning bully behavior of those individuals. So it's to liken, you know, someone who might get beat up for being transgendered. This is all because people aren't willing to push, you know, legislation in support of transgender. And that's, again, it's a straw man argument, as you mentioned.
Yeah. And I can't help but notice that we hear these speeches and the Democrats lean heavily on groups. They like to participate in groupthink. They like to separate the minorities into their categories and tell them that we stand for them. And of course, their policies never do anything to help them. You don't have to look any further than every inner city in America. They're all run exclusively by Democrat politicians, and they all could be compared to the description that President Trump was accused of making about other countries. They're horrible places. So which one of their policies is protecting these groups they claim to protect? Because I don't see any of it happening. And in fact, right after he said the clip that we just played, he went on to say, "We choose a living wage and paid leave, trade pacts that are fair, roads and bridges that won't rust away." Well, it shows you that he clearly wasn't listening to the speech, because we're getting increased wages. Just the corporate tax cut alone has already garnered people bonuses. It's garnered higher wages at company. You know, certain companies have already offered higher wages. Trade pacts. Yeah, he's pulled us out of some trade pacts because he thought that they weren't fair. So you want fair trade pacts? That's exactly what President Trump is trying to do. And then roads and bridges. Since he was inaugurated, he's been offering nearly $1 trillion in infrastructure spending over a 10-year period. This should be the Democrats', you know, nirvana. And he talks like none of that happened because he didn't listen to the speech. Again, this speech was written without knowing what President Trump was going to lay out. I don't like to repeat myself, but many of the things he laid out are liberal Democrat nirvana, and they act like it never happened. So, I mean, this, first of all, this speech could have been half the length. This Joe Kennedy, I think he was trying to step into the shoes of Obama. His speech, his cadence was exactly like an Obama speech.
I don't think it worked as well as it did for Obama.
And then for some, you know, for a party that talks a lot about diversity and protecting all these groups, they put the whitest of white politicians. They chose one from the Kennedy family, and they stuck him in front of a broken down car. I don't know how much more tone deaf the Democrats could be. I would have rather seen a angry, screaming Cory Booker. At least there would be some, you know, you would be backing up some of what you claim to represent. But you put a Kennedy and the whitest of Americans you could find, and it's not lost on a lot of people that a Kennedy was standing in front of a broken down car because they were in some training, auto repair training place. I didn't catch exactly what that was. A little bit of irony there, I would say.
Yeah. Well, I want to get one more soundbite because we've got to be coming up on our first break here. But here's, again, another example of what you just mentioned.
That is our story. It began the day our founding fathers and mothers set sail for a new world, fleeing oppression and intolerance. It continued with every word of our independence, the audacity to declare that all men are created equal, an imperfect promise for a nation struggling to become a more perfect union. It grew with every suffragette step, every freedom rider's voice, with every weary soul we welcomed to our shores. And to all the dreamers out there watching tonight, let me be absolutely clear. Ustedes son parte de nuestra historia. Vamos a luchar. Vamos a luchar por ustedes. Y no nos vamos a alejar. You are part of our story. We will fight for you, and we will not walk away.
All right. Then he must have been pretty excited about President Trump's State of the Union address, because if I was listening, and I was, that he announced paths to citizenship. I mean, these would be, it sounds like, Representative Joe Kennedy would be all in favor of President Trump's outline.
Well, I would agree with I would agree with that for sure. He should they should be in favor. Now, I'll admit, when the president proposed this earlier in the week, even before the speech, he had made the proposal. A lot of the talking heads are saying he knew full well that the Democrats would reject it, and he used it against them. Well, so be it. It worked, because he's outed them for what they are. They're political animals. They really don't care about these people. But the other thing that bothers me about his little stunt there, speaking to them in Spanish, I don't know if he knows how racist that is.
I was going to say. Sure, selective, at least, yeah.
I thought that all of the Dreamers were, well, first of all, I thought a lot of them were already integrated into our society. They're living here. So presumably most of them have jobs and speak English, not Spanish. But he's also assuming that all the illegal immigrants are Spanish speakers.
Right.
Well, wait a minute. When President Trump pointed out that many of these illegals coming from Mexico were drug dealers and rapists and whatever, he was pilloried for that, because he was called racist and, well, first of all, a nation is not a race necessarily, but that's semantics. But the other thing is, he didn't say that all Mexicans were those things. He said the ones that are coming over the border illegally are. It's the same with any issue. We get this all or nothing kind of right. stuff to kind of to marginalize people. And so they use that to try and marginalize Trump. But here he is speaking to these Dreamers in Spanish. Well, some of the people coming from the Central and South America aren't Spanish speakers. Some mm-hmm. of them speak Portuguese. Some of them speak French. Some of them speak English. So that was a little insulting to me. But what it pointed out to me was, and if you listen to the entire, it was about a 13-minute speech, that was really the theme of his speech. It was, look, you illegal aliens, you're the most important thing to the Democrat Party. Well, of course they are. They're potential voters. But beyond that, what about the American citizens? You know, President Trump said in the State of the Union, we're all there. There's we have dreamers here, not just the illegal aliens. There's American dreamers. And again, this speech was so tone deaf and so contrived and a little bit arrogant. And never mind the fact that to add to the visual that he created there, he looked like he was drooling, which, I mean, he really looked drunk. And what it was, apparently, is he put on too much chapstick, which is fine. I get it. They made fun of who was it, Marco Rubio, I think, or Ted Cruz for taking a drink of water during one of the debates. So I guess we get to make fun of his chapstick lips, because he looked like a drunk Kennedy in front of a broken down car. Yeah. I mean, you know, yeah. Again, it was so tone deaf and so unrepresentative of really what the American people think. You know, I saw some of the numbers coming out of the State of the Union, and something like 73-something percent of people agreed with the message of the State of the Union. So I'm afraid the people he's playing to in this speech are a small, small minority. So for someone who claims to stand for all Americans and he kind of mixed in a few of the things from the Declaration, and I don't pretend he understands that document, but clearly he's read it. it falls pretty flat in from where I'm standing.
Now, I do want to jump in with a Christian perspective here, because we need to hit a break here. As Christians, we do have a concern for all people, and that is not changed by this discussion whatsoever. We do have a love for our neighbor, even our neighbors who are of other countries. But we also understand that there is a rule of law, and so that we should, as Americans and as especially as Christians, we I think encourage people to move into our land. I mean, we're so proud of our land, or at least we should be, that we would want to share it with others. But there is a rule of law of how this is done about in a legal way. And so we want to promote that as well. So Christians do observe the law of the land. Romans 13 talks about this, promotes this. And we also have a love for the neighbor. But we shouldn't be encouraging those to break the law of our land. And that's, I think, the perspective that we can go on this. We need to take a break. If you have a comment about the State of the Union Address, now is a great time to call. 1-844-51-FAITH. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
The phone lines are now open. Call toll-free 1-844-51-FAITH. That's 1-844-51-FAITH.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. Over the strong objections of his own Justice Department, President Trump will clear the way for the publication of a classified memo on the Russia investigation that Republicans say shows improper use of surveillance by the FBI. The memo, prepared by Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee, is said to allege FBI misconduct in the initial stages of its investigation of potential ties between Russia and Trump's 2016 campaign. New witnesses have emerged in the 1981 drowning of actress Natalie Wood, which has prompted investigators to deem it a suspicious death and to name her former husband, 87-year-old actor Robert Wagner, as a person of interest in the case. On Wall Street, the Dow up by 37 points to 26,187. The NASDAQ dropped 26. The S&P lower by 2. More details at srnnews.com.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
Lisa and Nick Lether didn't want children, but that abruptly and dramatically changed. Experiencing severe stomach pain, Lisa was rushed to the hospital. Imagine their shock when the doctor told them she was pregnant and the baby was coming now. Lisa had no idea. Toby was perfectly healthy, and they welcomed him with open arms and lots of love. Parenthood was such a blessing, they've had a second child, Noah. Because of Lisa's situation, she regularly takes pregnancy tests to know whether or not she's expecting. This is another example that God knows what will bless our lives better than we do. Imagine the lost miracles through abortion because parents didn't feel ready for a baby. The Lord always knows what's best, even when circumstances are shouting no.
Follow us on Twitter at Life Issues USA and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Today's Takedown Minute is Article 7 of the Augsburg Confession, which is about the Church. It says, "Our churches teach that the one holy Church is to remain forever. The Church is the congregation of saints in which the gospel is purely taught and the sacraments are correctly administered. For the true unity of the Church, it is enough to agree about the doctrine of the gospel and the administration of the sacraments. It is not necessary that human traditions, that is, rites or ceremonies instituted by men, should be the same everywhere. As Paul says, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all." That was Article 7 of the Augsburg Confession for today's Takedown Minute.
I joined Planned Parenthood to fight for a world where every woman can live her best life. And together we've built a movement to protect and improve reproductive health. And I could not be prouder. Today, I'm announcing that I will be stepping down from my position as president of Planned Parenthood this year. From my first moment at Planned Parenthood, I have been in awe of our brave doctors, clinicians, staff, and volunteers who provide care to 1 in 5 American women. And to all of you who count on Planned Parenthood, know that this organization will be here for you no matter where you live, how much money you make, who you love, or where you come from. Planned Parenthood has been part of the fabric of this country for 100 years, and thanks to you, it'll be here for 100 more. This last year has been one of the most inspiring of my life as longtime staff and supporters marched and rallied alongside brand new activists like Deja Fox, a teenager from Tucson who fiercely defended Planned Parenthood to her United States Senator, or Gina Walkington, a Planned Parenthood patient from Bristol, Wisconsin, who got involved last winter and is now organizing thousands in her community. Deja and Gina are just some of the 11 million supporters who embody Planned Parenthood's mission. Planned Parenthood has helped tens of millions take control of their health and their futures by providing birth control, pap smears, breast exams, STI testing and treatment, and safe and legal abortion.
That's the voice of Cecile Richards, president of Planned Parenthood, who has announced her resignation from Planned Parenthood. Welcome back to Once for All. It's great to have you with us this Friday, where we're talking about news items from the week. And Jeff, what do you think? Is it getting a little too hot in the kitchen that that Cecile Richards needs to get out of there before it's a little bit too dangerous for her to be there?
Yeah, I think the modern day Paul Revere has ridden past Cecile Richards saying the DOJ is coming. The DOJ is coming. I'm kind of two minds on this. I clearly, anytime there's any kind of turmoil with Planned Parenthood, I celebrate it. I don't like the organization. I'm pro-life, of course, but and I don't buy all of the arguments of all of this women's health care that would disappear without them. No, we have plenty of other health care providers that would pick up the slack if they were gone. So I'm always happy when they're in turmoil. However, no one is more, I don't know who they can replace her with that will do a better job of solidifying the pro-life movement. I was reading an article on Christianity Today that was related to her stepping down, and there was a quote in there, and they didn't really attribute the quote, so I'm assuming this was the author saying this, but basically she said, depending on who you ask, the elegant 60-year-old is a national hero or a deeply evil woman and mass murderer. She represents the perfect dichotomy, I guess might be the right word, between the two sides. She's so marginalized that the pro-choicers see her as a hero. The pro-lifers see her as an evil, evil woman. And she's done more to build and solidify the pro-life movement than I think anyone could have. Now, yes, she's been an amazing leader for Planned Parenthood. She's weaved her way through all kinds of, you know, turmoil and you know, different all kinds of problems that the group has had, and the pro-choice movement is more, you know, vocal and together than ever. So it's sort of a catch-22 for me. But again, I hope ultimately that the reason she's leaving is because the walls are closing in, and I hope they continue to close in on that organization, because it's a disgusting thing that goes on there. And again, the idea that, oh, well, they provide women's health care. Well, that's wonderful. But I provide people with excellent landscape maintenance, you know, things, but that doesn't mean I get to drive down the freeway and throw kittens out the window of my car. You can't separate the two. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they provide health care does not give them an excuse to be what some people would picture as baby murderers. Mm-hmm. So again, that's a it's a false argument to make, and I hope that this is a sign of things to come.
Well, I wanted to focus on what she said at the very end there, at the end of the soundbite that we played, that, you know, Planned Parenthood has been providing, you know, safe, legal abortions. And, of course, whenever we hear the phrase safe, legal abortions...
Safe for whom?
Yeah, we point out the obvious, that the process of killing a human life is never safe for the one being killed. That's the obvious part. But also, it would seem then to stand to reason that that Planned Parenthood would be in favor of certain legislation that would make sure women are kept safe during the process, and they've been resistant to any legislation that would promote that. So it's a little the phrase safe. Safe, legal, and rare, as we heard it from the Clintons, or a safe, legal abortion. Again, obviously not safe for the one being killed, but also is a misnomer just from the perspective of Planned Parenthood. Also, with her resignation, I think that we're seeing, as you mentioned, the walls closing in. That Planned Parenthood is in all kinds of trouble. That we've been seeing these videos being leaked constantly about, you know, selling baby body parts, and you mentioned that the people are becoming more pro-life, and I can't help but think that has anything to do, but the fact that we have more technology to see what's going on in the womb since Roe v. Wade was passed, you know, in the 70s, so that we can actually see a human life in the womb, a separate heartbeat. We know that it's separate DNA from the mother. This is a real human life, and Planned Parenthood has been trying to quiet that truth to keep business going. And now that maybe the funding from the federal government is threatened, maybe that it's not a financial least sustainable business anymore.
Yeah, and you mentioned the videos, and I guess the theme of our show today may end up being false arguments, because we keep mentioning that. But one of the arguments we hear about what we've learned from these videos is, well, those are highly edited and can't be trusted. Well, they may or may not be highly edited, but the words that came out of the mouths of those people are their words. How you cut them up, it can make a difference in how it's perceived, but they still said those words. They still were trading baby parts on the open market. So it's a little, it rings a little shallow to me to be saying, well, those videos were edited. Well, which part of those videos isn't true? Because you can call them highly edited, but you're not really defending them. You're not telling me which part of those didn't happen, which part of them aren't true.
Right.
And
show us the evidence.
Show me some evidence that not that the video was edited, but that those things weren't said, because yeah. I can hear with my ears. I can see with my eyes.
Right.
These people are trading body parts. They're probably breaking the law. Clearly, it's an immoral thing whether or not they're breaking the law. And that's why someone like Cecile Richards, as the face of Planned Parenthood, has, again, as I said before, has solidified the pro-life movement, because she's seen by the pro-lifers as an evil, evil person. And whether that's fair or not,
that's
good for the movement.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, again, like I said, she's also been good for the pro-choice movement. So
right.
It's sort of it's sort of a six of one, half dozen of the other situation. I don't know where things go with her stepping down, but again, I'll go back to what I said before. I hope it's a sign of things to come.
Yeah. Well, one last thought. Whoever fills her position, I don't think will be there very long, because she has, she's really painted that position into a corner, and then whoever replaces her is going to have a tough road to hoe. We're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we're going to look at the positive things from a local perspective, an organization that's trying to be a cause for life. That on Once for All. Stay tuned.
The phone lines are now open. Call toll free 1-844-51-FAITH. That's 1-844-51-FAITH.
With SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. The latest employment report took the experts by surprise. Employers added a lot more jobs than expected last month. Payrolls growing by 200,000 jobs, and wages rose at the fastest pace in 8 years. Over to the objections of the FBI, the White House making plans to publicly release that controversial classified memo relating to the Russia investigation. It has been a severe flu season. In about a half hour, the Centers for Disease Control will be issuing its weekly influenza update. The CDC still recommends a flu shot, although the vaccine's effectiveness said by experts to be minimal this season. Stocks are sharply lower on Wall Street. The Dow down about 261 points. The NASDAQ is off 71. More details at srnnews.com.
And now it's time for Table Talk Extras with Pastor Brian Wolfmuller.
We Christians have an historical eyewitness faith. We don't just believe in ideas or some sort of abstract concepts like we're being invited into Plato's Republic. No, we have things that happened in history to which we cling, to which we hold fast to. Like we say in the Creed, Jesus was crucified under Pontius Pilate. Or like Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15, where he's talking about the gospel. He says, I remind you, brothers, of the gospel I preached to you, which you received, in which you stand, and by which you are being saved, if you hold fast to the word I preached to you, unless you believe in vain. For I delivered to you as of first importance what I also received, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scripture, that he was buried, that he was raised on the third day in accordance with the Scriptures, and that he appeared to Cephas, then to the 12. Then he appeared to more than 500 brothers at one time, most of whom are still alive, though some have fallen asleep. Then he appeared to James and to all the apostles, and last of all, as to one untimely born, he also appeared to me. Paul says, if you want to know about Jesus, about his life, about his death, about his resurrection, then just go ask the people that saw it. Our faith is grounded on fact, in history, in those things that happened, because our Lord, who is outside of time, sunk himself into our flesh and into our sin so that he could bring us who live in history into eternal life that he shares with his Father. But praise God that our salvation comes to us in the birth and life and death, the historical realities of our Lord Jesus Christ.
This has been a production of Table Talk Radio. For more information, visit tabletalkradio.org.
And welcome back to Once for All. We have a special guest in studio with us today. John Mayer is the Executive Director of Pregnancy Care Center Grants Pass and newly taken the position, so getting the office chair set just right there, John. Welcome to our broadcast of Once for All.
Thank you very much, Evan. I appreciate being on the show.
We were talking about the resignation of Cecile Richards from Planned Parenthood in the previous segment. What's your reaction to that news?
You know, details around Cecile's departure remain very unclear. She's been at Planned Parenthood, I understand, since 2006, and I have no doubt that someone will come up to take her place. But, you know, what is clear is that in the United States, we have seen a large decrease in abortion rates to levels not seen since prior to Roe versus Wade and early 1970s. Some studies illustrate that we've seen a decrease of 23% of abortions since 2008. So I can say that your Pregnancy Care Center Grants Pass, we're going through an executive transition. As a longtime leader of 16 years, Robin Fuller, she's moving into a different role and supporting the PCC while pursuing other opportunities to encourage and speak into the lives of others as a life coach and speaker. So we're going through a similar transition on a much more positive note. Absolutely. I like to look at it, though.
Absolutely. Tell us a little bit about your background, where you come from as you step into this position.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So I was most recently working in an in-home support service corporation for seniors in the Bay Area, California. I got my bachelor's degree in business administration and my master's actually in theology. So working in a nonprofit, faith-based organization has always been what I was feeling called to. So coming here to Grants Pass and working at the Pregnancy Care Center of Grants Pass is just a dream come true for me.
Now, some people have the perception that this effort should be run by women, and this is women should care for women. But why is it important for men to be stepping into this role as well?
Yeah, well, studies actually show that about 70% of the decisions being made for abortion are actually have a male influence involved. So whether there's a husband or just a boyfriend or a father, sometimes it is a mother or a grandmother, others that are playing into this. So the decision is oftentimes not being made by that woman alone. And from a cultural perspective and just a nation as a whole, the children, these babies who are aborted, they're not all women either. So in that way, in many ways, it's not just a woman's choice. However, we of course have allowed that it is up to her to make that decision, and that's where we come in. They're very intelligent, our patients. We want to empower them to just give them the information that they need to make an informed decision. So that's where we're at. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Excuse me. So we were talking about Planned Parenthood, and of course, when they're in the news, we hear about the pro-lifers would like to end the federal funding. So that kind of leads me to the question about your organization. How is the PCC funded, and do you receive any federal funding?
No, your Pregnancy Care Center receives no government funding at all. So as a faith-based nonprofit, your Pregnancy Care Center relies entirely on the support of the community to fund its work. We have many who give of their time, of their money throughout the year in many different ways. And if you're hearing the sound of my voice right now and you're feeling led to be a part of what we're doing, please call our office. Yeah.
Excellent. How does the Pregnancy Care Center serve a woman with facing an unplanned pregnancy?
Yeah, so our medical clinic is AAA HC accredited, and we treat every person who comes into our clinic with love and respect. For many, they're coming to the PCC in a very difficult circumstances, wondering if they are pregnant, many of which are unplanned. The staff work really hard to maintain a warm and inviting atmosphere while providing care and compassionate service to each and every patient. So we aim to treat every woman who comes through our clinic as the, as I said, intelligent, empowered women that they are, and our goal is merely to give her the tools that she needs to make an informed decision. So these tools include conducting pregnancy tests, limited OB ultrasound with a registered nurse, giving her the information, resources, connecting her. There's a lot of different needs that play into this decision. So we want to connect her in all the ways possible where she feels ultimately supported. A lot of these decisions are being made with the because they don't feel supported. So that's why they're not, going to Planned Parenthood maybe and deciding to go ahead and abort because of the lack of resources and support around them. So that's what we aim to do, is to connect them where they need to be connected, give them the information. And while we always do hope that each person will choose life for their child, even if this includes setting the child up for an adoption plan, we will love and respect each patient no matter what her decision is. So if life is chosen, God gets the glory. But if the woman chooses abortion, then that's in God's hands also. So we're here for her. If she ever comes to feel the full impact of that decision, we're here for her there also.
Excellent.
Well, and I think I already know the answer to this next question, because my daughter actually has received some services from the Pregnancy Care Center, and we've chosen to give back quite a bit because of the way that she's been treated there. But what charges are assessed to the clients, if there are any, who come in your doors?
Yeah, good question. There are absolutely no charges assessed. We are thinking about just unrolling something to show the value of the services being provided completely free of charge, but they will always be free of charge. We don't want that to be a determining factor of whether or not somebody comes through our doors. We don't want them to have to worry about having insurance, paying even a penny. That's why it is your PCC. It's the community that funds this. Yeah.
Oftentimes, we think of the pregnancy care center serving maybe a teenager who, you know, made a bad choice and now is facing a pregnancy. But talk about how the pregnancy care center can serve any woman who is pregnant, not just in a crisis situation.
Absolutely. The pregnancy care center is the place to go for every woman who believes she may be pregnant. So not just teens, not just unexpected. We want to be the place to go for any woman. Every person, really, with depending on the circumstances in their life, can be at risk of just not knowing exactly what to do in that situation. So that's where we can come alongside her with experts in the field to provide her the support that she needs and give her those resources. So we value professionalism and service of excellence, and our medical staff are highly trained in every step of the process from the time the patient comes through our doors to when they are leaving. So our goal is not to pressure or coerce a patient into making a decision, but rather to serve her in ways that she needs to be served. Christ meets us where we are, and we aim to do the same, showing through our actions and our love for them. Ultimately, Christ's love shining through us. So that's what we want to do for them.
That's great.
So, so what other programs, in addition to working with the clients that walk through the door, what other programs is the PCC involved in?
Yeah, so we have EPIC, which is a sexual health program promoting abstinence. There we're doing school presentations encouraging healthy sexual decisions. Our mission there is to empower students to use decision-making and critical thinking strategies to make healthy choices about sex, relationships, abstinence. It's a big deal. So with many possible outcomes, both positive and negative, we can come alongside students as an accredited medical clinic to offer information and hope so they can make healthy decisions about sex and relationships, because as we know, it's much more than just you got college, you got all these other things in the future, and an unplanned pregnancy and STDs, and which is a big factor of I think it's 1 in 4 active teens have an STD. So we want to just educate about that and show that there's an impactful decision being made here, and we can choose abstinence, which is ultimately the only 100% way to, to not become pregnant unexpectedly. We also have Journey, which is our abortion recovery program. It's been highly successful over the years that we've been conducting that class. It's for individual and group classes offering hope after abortion. So we provide confidential opportunity for those with a past abortion to walk together toward hope and healing. So that's what we're doing there. As far as Pathways, that's our parenting resource and education program that we offer. That is individual support and group classes for expecting parents. So our mission is to prepare and equip parents during pregnancy and early parenthood to make healthy decisions for themselves and for their families. And we also have a baby boutique that connects with there, with that program, where you can earn much needed baby items. You know how expensive that gets when you first become a parent. So everything from clothes to car seats and all of that. So we do take donations for those, except for the car seats and the cribs. Those do need to be new, but they're able to earn those as they go through a 14-week program to get all the tools, the resources that they need. We encourage the fathers to come alongside, and so it's a group effort, and sometimes they already have babies that are there as well. It's fun.
You know, a lot of times pregnancy care centers are painted by the left as organizations of great manipulation. You know, a woman comes in with an unplanned pregnancy and they're just here to manipulate you against having an abortion. Is that reflective of how the Pregnancy Care Center of Grants Pass works with clients?
Yeah, it absolutely is not. So the Pregnancy Care Center of Grants Pass, as I had said, we want it to be accredited. We are accredited by the AAHC accreditation as a medical clinic. That's to keep us to a very high standard that's recognized nationwide to make sure that we are caring for people in the way that they need to be cared for. So we take that very seriously. Our mission is not to coerce. It's not to just thump them with a Bible or anything like that. We want to show them the love and God's love for them through our actions. And then when words are necessary and we're able to get that permission to speak into their lives a little bit more with their own personal testimonies and things, then absolutely we might, we might make a more of a connection there. Mm-hmm. But ultimately it's to give them the tools, the resources, just the education, all the information that they're going to need to really make an informed decision. It is their decision. Legally, it's their decision, and they are empowered and intelligent to make that decision, and we completely respect that, and we just want to be there to support them through that decision-making process.
That's great.
Yeah, and I wanted to go back to, you mentioned your abstinence education program, and I just want to say how important I think that is, and the reason I say that is my youngest child, my son, came home one day from school, and they had been talking at the high school. They had been talking about sexual education, I guess you would call it, and he mentioned he had had a bit of a I guess you could call it an argument with the health the health instructor, because he felt like that abstinence was left out of the discussion. And he said something fairly profound, I think, for a 16 or 17 year old at the time. And it reflected exactly how I feel, but I don't think I had ever expressed this to him. He said, shouldn't the discussion start with abstinence? At least we can talk about the other things. We can learn about the different measures you can take, but he said, shouldn't it start with abstinence? It's the only 100% way to prevent pregnancy, and it's the only 100% way to prevent disease. And I thought that was pretty profound, and so I don't, you don't have to comment on this, but I celebrate the fact that you have a program like this, because I think too often in our schools they don't start there, and that's really where the discussion should start. It doesn't have to end there, but it has to start there.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and you're right. Oregon State, we do have abstinence in our schools as a required program, but I believe that some counties are veering away from that, and not all states even teach that at all. So I agree that we should start there. It is the only 100% effective way to prevent pregnancies and STIs. So that's absolutely right.
Yeah. Well, and not to mention, it is God's plan for us. I mean, minor detail there.
Absolutely.
Now, I know that the Pregnancy Care Center relies upon people's donations to continue operation. And talk about how the Pregnancy Care Center can receive not just monetary donations, but donation of household items laying around the house.
Yeah, absolutely. Diapers, old baby clothes. We want to give our patients, our clients, the best. So if they're really worn out, that's not something we would accept. But if you have any baby clothes, usually you use them for a small season.
Right.
They've grown out of them a few months later. So yeah, bring them to us. We'll get them into a good home. We're really looking for volunteers right now, also for the Silver Ring thing, going back to abstinence there. The Silver Ring thing, we are hosting that at Grants Pass High Performing Arts Center on May 9th. So we are looking for volunteers. It takes many people to be a part of that. That is very Christian-based as far as speaking in the Word. We have even many people come to know the Lord through that program, and you get a Silver Ring for $20, showing that commitment to be to wait until marriage. We also are hiring a full-time nurse manager, paid salary, full-time nurse manager Monday through Friday right now, and we do need a nurse volunteer for Wednesdays as well. So there's many ways to help and to serve, in addition to the financial support, of course, that is always very, very needed. And you can contact our office at 541-479-6264. more to get more information.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've been talking with John Mayer of the Pregnancy Care Center of Grants Pass, the brand new executive director. John, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And Jeff, thanks for coming in on Fridays. We always appreciate it.
Always my pleasure.
And thanks for tuning in to this edition of Once for All. If you missed today's broadcast, you can check it out on our website, onceforallradio.com, and download at your leisure and keep it saved on your iPad. Or do we have iPads anymore?
I still use my iPad.
Okay, good. Just making sure. Or on your computer or whatever you use, and listen at your convenience. Thanks for listening.
This has been Once for All. You can contact the show by sending an email, delivered onceforall@gmail.com. You can listen again to this show or any other episodes by visiting onceforallradio.com. Until next time, stand firm in the faith, once delivered to the saints.